Arm's Length Reporting for investors who want the whole story. This is the Cortland Economics Report.
Hey, welcome in time for GER Politics. Got a very, very interesting situation going on right now that we are going to discuss in the entire first half of this show. I'm going to start out with Jim McKinney. I'm going to be talking about the reality of the shutdown versus the real reason for a shutdown. These are simply ideas that I have had, and so far, Jimmy hasn't started laughing at me yet. Jimmy, let me give you a couple of very hard numbers here. One of them is COVID deaths in the United States as of right now, and we're recording this on Friday afternoon, is 36,118. Deaths from traffic accidents for that same time period in America are about 38,000. Now, having said that, one thing that nobody can disagree with is that a very small group of people right now are controlling almost the entire, well, certainly the majority of the population in the United States. And the question that I have is, I'm not sure, based on the numbers that you and I have studied for ad nauseum today prior to recording this, I'm not really sure that that shutdown is even close to being warranted. What do you think, bud?
So I think when the media and the images that we saw in China and Wuhan for closing this down, the initial reporting and the death rates, there was a significant concern for any leader that you wanted to avoid the tragedies of having overwhelmed hospital situation and, you know, not being able to treat people. And people were not, they just, educated people, scientists, advisors, politicians were not aware to the depth of how threatening this virus is. Mm-hmm. So as we've gained more knowledge, it's becoming apparent that it is not nearly as threatening as the initial assessments, portrayed, and that the media portrayed. Actually, it's a weird spin. The media initially was playing it down because it was in China and not a worry. And then, of course, they hyped it up very much. And when I'm talking about the media, I'm talking about just mainstream, you know, corporate media in the United States. And what we see now is, as we get more research and more information, we're seeing, one, that the deaths are still climbing, but the actual infections and hospitalizations are declining. So that's very good sign. And the overall numbers are nowhere near what would the original estimates were. And then there's some really good research that's finally coming out that is really identifying how prevalent it is in society, which is going to significantly reduce the statistics on death rates. So yes, fear has been driving these decisions, but now that we have more information, that fear should be less diminished.
Well, Jim, if you look at the gross numbers as they were published yesterday on Friday, if you take the numbers of deaths versus cases, it's pretty scary. It's 5%. 5% of all cases result in death. The fact of the matter is the United States authorities or whoever don't have a clue how many actual cases of COVID-19 exist out there.
That's right. And we've talked about this. The way the system has been designed right now, the people that are being tested, the vast majority of the people that are being tested are based on recommendations of doctor if they're showing very severe signs. And the idea was there to only test for the very severe signs in order to get them in for treatment if in fact they were bad, but if they were in a bad circumstance or condition. And what we're seeing now is that a vast number of people have the virus or were somehow connected with the virus. And I will refer to an April 11th study from Stanford Medical University. I'll give it to you so you can post it online for your listeners. But it's the antibody testing that's being done out of Santa Clara County and the region there from Stanford. And what they're identifying is that there's a vast number of people that have been infected or had contact with the disease but show no symptoms. And that is what we've wanted to see. The numbers are phenomenally higher than of people that were infected related to who's been tested, confirmed with the case, and then to the number of people that are actually in the hospital. And it's showing a much, much wider segment of the population, maybe as much as 50 times more people have been in contact with the disease that have never been tested and that show no symptoms. So that would significantly change the fear factor on this. And I think that's a really important study. And that's what we need to do to identify this, to get the fear factor down, to get people to get control of their lives again and open up our economy.
Well, Jimmy, the fact of the matter is you talk about a great way to take something down. And you folks listening, you can define something as anything you want. You can define it as a family. You can define it as a country. You can define it as a city. Very effectively, this shutdown is going to absolutely throttle down the economy of the United States. Now, if in fact the 5% mortality rate is a correct number, then the action is a correct thing to do. By that, I mean the action of quarantine is a proper thing to do. 5% is pretty damn high. But we are not convinced, we being yourself and myself, that the denominator of this equation, deaths as compared to total number of cases, we're not sure that the denominator is anywhere close to being correct. And you would surmise that the denominator is very, very inaccurate.
So here in this Stanford test, or excuse me, in the Stanford research paper, they estimate right now, based on their survey data, that by April 1st, there were between 48,000 and 81,000 people had been infected in Santa Clara County. But the confirmed cases in Santa Clara County was 956.
Right.
So right there, you can see how this really changes the perspective. And thankfully, people are out there doing this research, because we've got to, the impact of this, the economic shutdown, is going to be much more devastating than the statistics in the deaths of this virus. And of course, a lot of people are talking about the number of suicides, depression, violence, violence. Those are things that we need to consider. And oh, by the way, we all have to eat, and the economy of the United States has to go forward. But with manipulation of this information, we are undermining the opportunity to get back to work. And what I fear is that there's other people that are doing it for nefarious intent or political intent. And that's really unfortunate.
I would have to say right now that I would not totally discount the reasoning behind what's going on right now as having very, very nefarious reasons behind it. I'm not saying that's the case. I have no factual evidence. All I have is my gut level feeling based on the numbers that I'm looking at. The average person who I talk to, Jim, is firmly convinced that the COVID-19 has a mortality rate of 5%. To me, that makes absolutely zero sense.
No, and I think most, even the professionals at CDC and, of course, in the president's team right now are declaring that it's far lower than that, 0.3%, maybe less. But the media has portrayed, and the fear and the numbers when you see on the side, of each one of these chyrons for the different media organizations, it creates a picture that's very frightening and very scary. And that's unfortunate.
It's very scary, actually. And I would simply like people to really stop and think about this. Do some of your own study. Let's figure out, is it really the situation today? Does it warrant the negative effects that are occurring because of this lockdown? The negative effects are, number one, personally speaking, depression, etc., etc. We're going to talk about that in the next segment with Dr. Frieda Birnbaum. And the other major negative effect, the one that scares the daylights out of me, it has to do with the U.S. economy. Our economy could be absolutely shattered, Jim, because of this thing. And that really, really is frightening.
That's going to hurt a lot more people.
A lot. Let's get some opinions from you folks out there.
Your weekly fix on finance and investing. This is the Corlin Economics Report.
Welcome into Dr. Frieda on the Line. You know, we're going to talk specifically right now about what Dr. Phil, another clinical psychologist, said on the Laura Ingraham show yesterday. But what I would like to get Dr. Frieda to explain to us right now, because she is a very major key in understanding this entire situation with isolation, et cetera, et cetera. From a psychological standpoint, Dr. Frieda, isolation is not a good thing. Can you explain why?
Yes, isolation is bad for your health. It can create problems long after this virus is gone, and we need to learn how to go ahead and reconnect. So when we're looking at human beings and what their needs are, isolation is just as bad for you as hunger, and it's bad for you as thirst. We need all of this. We need connecting with other people. And it's virtual reality that's really doing some damage, and we can't help it right now. But in the future, we need to know that it is further isolating us because, you know, touch releases oxytocin, which is a natural cuddle hormone. And studies have shown that the health consequences of prolonged loneliness are equivalent to smoking 15 cigarettes a day, with a 40% risk of dementia and 2 episodes of depression, and which increases the likelihood of a 3rd episode. So, you know, money, material, belongings, technology have led us to neglect our relationships, and human connections can really protect our health. And there are online things we can do, and I will continue to tell you how you can protect your health. But we do have to know that loneliness from isolation increases the chance of dying younger, and prolonged loneliness changes the brain, making its victims paranoid towards threats and more obsessive about the coronavirus. And they can cause disoriented sleep, depression, and cognitive functioning, and lowering our immunity, and which is what we really need the most right now. So there's also much more implications as well. A high risk of organ failures, weight gain, diseases, you name it, across the board. So we have to have this need to go ahead and to combat this type of loneliness that is something that is an epidemic in itself. As Dr. Phil and I were both looking to discuss the same issue today, we need to lower our immunity, increase our immunity with being more productive, by being more creative, having a passion to connecting us to other people. Some people are selling things online. In China, they have these dance tournaments with the medical staff. They're having contests in other countries to connect other people together, to do whatever they can. In Iran, they're having karaoke classes where people are staging, and celebrities are contacting people at home and giving them, in other words, reconnecting to people. Because the Darwinian evolution is not necessarily all bad. We need to have communities who eventually develop these immune systems to these local diseases, because people need to be able to cooperate with one another. And a natural disaster is an example. So we need to have these type of orientations toward cooperating with each other physically eventually as well, because the concern is that loneliness can sustain itself after a while, because you can really get it into a place where it becomes almost an addiction on its own. So you really have to be careful when you can go out. And I don't know if Dr. Phil stressed that we do need, this is a wave, and we do need to keep our distance because the wave is going to come and go. But while we're doing that, we need to be able to be smart enough to connect in a way where we're not lonely and have this disease upon us. In Paris, they're even wearing fashion masks, which is making it fashionable when they're having these models walking down, during Fashion Week. Mm-hmm. So if we can be creative with our isolation and we can still feel not lonely, but we can feel connected, then we can combine the food, the two. So yes, I do agree with Dr. Phil what he's saying, but to go a step further than what he said, we need to keep that social isolation in a very serious form. We can't ignore one for the other. We have to really be strong in both areas. And remember, when you do de-isolate yourself, sounds like I'm talking about something else, but when we do that, we need to get ourselves back on track. Some people will become paranoid and just stay home, whether they have to or not. So there's this fine line that you have to keep readjusting and keep changing each time our facts are changing and our instructions are changing. So don't do one or the other. Don't just connect physically, or don't just isolate yourself physically. But each time you make the right choices.
Just take about 2 minutes here, Frieda, if you would, and let's get some psychological advice as to specifically how to de-isolate yourself.
Well, you know, psychologically, the way to do that, it's like anything. The sad thing is we are conditioned to keep doing what we're familiar with, whether it's bad or good. And we need to uncondition that. And it's almost like going into the cold water and being uncomfortable. We become more and more comfortable, even though this is something we're not familiar with staying away from other people. And what's going to happen is that we have to become uncomfortable and say, all right, this is a calculated chance. This is a time right now that it is safe. And you have to have the facts. I always say the first thing before the loneliness is the virus, because the loneliness is something that's acute, and a virus is right now. It's not acute. It's not lingering, but it's going to attack you right now. So number one are the facts. What are the facts? What do you have to do to maintain your health? When you do that, number two is, how can you keep yourself from this isolation of loneliness? And what is it you have to recondition yourself? Psychologically, people are creatures of habit, and they will keep doing the same mistakes or the same good things, no matter what they are.
And
what is safe, talking to another person physically, it will come in waves. It will come back and forth. People will get it. But if people that you're talking to are 6 feet away, if people that you're talking to are wearing face masks, if there aren't a lot of people around at one time, then you can start feeling safe as we step into this new territory.
Great advice from Dr. Frieda Birnbaum. If you have any questions, address them on the blog, if you would. Frieda will be back with us if she has time tomorrow. Dr. Frieda, it's a real pleasure to have you here. Thank you.
Thank you.
To find out more about today's guests, visit us on the web at www.kereport.com. You're listening to the Corlin Economics Report. We'll be back in a moment. Providing unique reporting on markets and companies since 1990. This is the Corlin Economics Report.
Hey, welcome in time to wrap up KER Politics. This is the second half of our show vis-a-vis the political issue. The hot topic right now, of course, is the coronavirus. But, you know, that is very, very closely related, obviously, to the situation with China. On the program last week, we had Joshua Phillip, who is the chief investigative reporter for the Epoch Times and a close friend of all of ours here. The Epoch Times, because of their investigative reporting, have pretty much concluded beyond a shadow of a doubt that the action of the COVID-19 spreading from out of China into the rest of the world is pretty much a proven fact. And aside from those very unfortunate people who have COVID-19 and perhaps perish in the end, That's a very, very terrible thing, but it does look like the World Health Organization screwed up pretty good in this case. David Rubin, who is a regular guest on our program, he is also, as you know, the former mayor of Shiloh in the West Bank of Israel, a really good guy. David is pretty much our go-to individual whenever we discuss issues on the Middle East. But his publicist contacted me earlier this week and said David has a tremendous amount of expertise in the Chinese COVID-19 situation. Why don't you talk with him about that? What a great idea. Mayor Rubin, what is your opinion of what's going on there?
Well, I think that the answer can be summed up in three letters. CCP. The Chinese Communist Party,
yeah,
which has very clearly over a long period of time, over a number of years, been cultivating an image as a government that encourages competition, that encourages a free economy, while at the same time brutally cracking down on its people. But I think that the reality is much more nefarious than that, and frankly quite ominous, having seen what we've seen over the past couple of months.
You know, it's interesting. I, as listeners are aware, I was a member of the board of directors of a publicly traded bank that was actually closely held, even though we traded on NASDAQ. But it was closely held by a group of Chinese individuals. I would have to say, the privilege of working with them for about 20-21 years. And the reason I call it a privilege is because the Chinese mentality is very, very different from the Western mentality. A lot of people think that it is, in a sense, an uncaring, etc., etc., and I would say that's probably not true. It's true in the sense that regarding individuals, it perhaps could be characterized as being non-caring, but regarding the forward motion of their organizations, they care very much about that. And I think perhaps from what I know about this COVID-19, which we've been following it since December of last year, 2019, I think it was a mistake on their part, and I don't think it was a calculated mistake. But I also personally feel that the folks who were in the camp of it being a bioweapon on the part of the Chinese, I think they're probably wrong about that. But as you guys are aware out there, I'm very open-minded, so I always get opinions from other people, but I need reasons for those opinions. Do you think that this outbreak that was pretty much caused by mainland China in Wuhan, do you think that was a calculated event, David?
Oh, I think it was I do think that it was a calculated event. The question is what their calculation was. Was their calculation to advance in their biological capabilities, or was it a calculated, intentional attempt to create biochemical weapons that and it just went. It just went haywire. I know that the American intelligence at this time is saying that that there was something that happened in a lab. That they're not even mentioning the word weapons. But I think we have to make a distinction between the people of China and the Chinese Communist Party,
of course,
which has ruled by force for many years. There are a lot of very good things in China. A lot of wonderful people, and there are a lot of beautiful things in the Chinese culture. But as the government and the media in Taiwan have pointed out very clearly, there's something very fishy going on there, very suspicious, and I think that the fish is not fish that is sold in the wet market in Wuhan. Frankly, I don't think it began in the wet market in Wuhan. I think it began in a laboratory. And as you know, that virtually everything in China, despite their pretense to having a free economy, everything in China is basically controlled by the Chinese Communist Party, and certainly things that are as serious as this. So I think I heard you mentioned earlier about Joshua Phillips and his documentary, which was put out on the Epoch Times. I think that there are very, very serious questions at a minimum that need to be investigated, and they need to be asked by the mainstream media and by the governments of the free world. You know, we in Israel have had a growing relationship with China, a trade relationship,
right?
In recent years, and there was some controversy about it a few months ago, and the Israeli government was considering stopping all trade that has to do with our national infrastructure, because the Chinese were trying to gain access to our national infrastructure through trade, and all with a friendly face and all with a positive spin. But I think this is something that we have to be very, very concerned about, because I believe that the Chinese Communist Party, as most communist parties in the past, are seeking world domination, and obviously through economic means, but I think that there may be much more to it than that.
David, I think that's a very, very astute statement. I agree 100% on that one, and I'd like to pursue that. I'm going to take a commercial break here in about a minute and a half, and after that, when we're back for the final segment, I want to pursue that. And the reason I want to do that is it logically is a very, very sound argument. The Chinese could not win a conventional military war, or for that matter, an unconventional war involving nuclear weapons against the rest of the world. That would be very, very difficult. And in my opinion, being a bit of a student of history, it'd be probably impossible. But I will say this, the Chinese Communist Party has so much control of the United States that it is absolutely staggering. Look where all of our prescription drugs come from. I don't want to say all. Let me be perfectly accurate. Let me say better than 90% of our prescription drugs we are dependent on mainland China. I think that your government, quite frankly, was very, very wise when they didn't allow a situation like that to occur even closely vis-a-vis the trade between Israel and China, because the most effective way to take over a country is to do it internally. And that, I think, is exactly what's happening right now between the U.S. and China. Ladies and gentlemen, stick around. Going to have a quick commercial. I'll be right back with Mayor David Rubin. Welcome back. Continue my discussion about the Chinese situation with COVID-19 with Mayor David Rubin, former mayor of the town of Shiloh in the West Bank of Israel. Very interesting guy. He is also the author of a book that I am about ready to go out and purchase. It's called Trump and the Jews. I can't think of anybody who could cover that subject really much better than David Rubin. David is also the founder and president of a philanthropic organization called the Shiloh Israel Children's Fund. David was involved in a terrorist attack on the part of he and his family. David was wounded. His son came very close to perishing in that attack, and so David is obviously, as I am, very, very concerned about the innocent children in Israel. I would ask you guys to please, I'm going to put up a link for the Shiloh Israel Children's Fund, and if you want any information about it, if you want to totally fund it, and that's for you, Irish Tony, if you guys, whatever you'd like to do, please do something there. It's a very worthwhile organization. What I would like to chat about right now, David, is I really would like to get your views on, I believe that that China is in a very covert fashion incredibly effectively taking over most of the free world right now. And I think the COVID-19 gave us our first insight into that. Can you opine on that, Dave?
I'm not sure I caught the question.
The question is, I think that China has gone... achieved really much more than the average person is aware of in terms of their amount of control over the rest of the free world. I mean, when you look at the economic implications of our trade with China, ours being the U.S., when you look at the implications of the fact that they control over 90% of the prescription drugs that are imported by the United States, that's terrifying to me. It really shows to me that if they had nefarious intentions, they could very easily take advantage of us in that.
Oh, clearly. Clearly, the economics are the path to domination.
Yes.
But, you know, it's kind of like, I don't know how familiar your listeners are with the sport of boxing, but... You know, when a very smart boxer will try to weaken his opponent by doing a lot of jabs and some body blows,
right,
to weaken him, and then eventually he goes for the left hook or the, you know, the straight right hand punch to the jaw. But that's how they weaken the opponent. The Chinese work in a similar fashion. I believe that they're using the economics and using all the covert strategies, like I described in our first segment, where they're trying to take over Israeli infrastructure through very friendly business ties. And I think that's what they're trying to do with the rest of the free world as well. They're lending money. They're sending their products. And I think when it comes to the coronavirus, I think that what we're talking about here is also I believe it's a plan in which they are trying very clearly. To use their economic means and their economic prowess towards world domination. Now, you know, I don't have evidence other than what I saw in that documentary that we referred to,
right,
and some of the intelligence information that has already gradually been verified. You know, some of it may be circumstantial evidence and a gut feeling, but I really believe that the coronavirus did not start in the wet markets of Wuhan, as horrible as those wet markets are.
Yeah.
And I also don't believe that it was just an accident. I just think that it's just too suspicious that they were so prepared to immediately shut down Wuhan. They were so prepared with all of the testing equipment and the masks and everything that they needed to shut down Wuhan. And it just seems like there's too much circumstantial evidence. And then they were already well prepared to use their propaganda machine and to send out masks and all kinds of equipment to sell all of this equipment to all of the European countries and even to the United States and Israel, I might add. So it all seems part of a very sinister plan And, you know, whether it started as a result of an accident, you know, I would love to know what they were doing there. I don't think they were doing it, as some of the media has alluded to. I don't think that they were working in that lab on this, you know, on these viruses in order to show that they're better than the rest of the world. I wish I could believe that it was just that.
Well, I have to tell you, my theory is, I think, coincides 100% with what you're talking about, in the sense that it really was almost impossible to overthrow countries in the world. For example, the United States are looking for world domination. It's literally impossible to do that by historically effective warfare. You know, this, we're not living in 1940, we're not living in 1930, we're not living in 1950, etc. It would never work, and they could never win something like that. But economically, they have us on the ropes right now, in a sense. If I'm not mistaken, just in the last few days, the Chinese economy has surpassed the strength of the U.S. economy, first time ever. I don't know if they've gotten to that point yet, but listening to the news last night, I believe that they have. And there is no more effective way to take over a country than to do it internally. The folks at the Epoch Times are convinced that they are doing that very effectively in the United States, through drug warfare, etc., etc., and now we have this COVID-19 thing. David, I have to say one thing. The one place, the one area where I really have a lot of respect for the country that you live in and support, is that when you see a threat to your people, you stop it immediately in the most effective way possible. And that, I believe, is what the United States should be doing right now, and Canada, for that matter, in terms of this virus situation.
Oh, clearly. Look, we have developed that instinct by necessity, because we happen to live in a very bad neighborhood, yep, so to speak. You know, we're a tiny country about the size of New Jersey. We're surrounded by countries with a landmass 700 times the landmass of Israel. Mm-hmm. And they're constantly trying to kill us. So,
that's right.
So we learn by necessity that you have to keep the radar up and keep an eye out for when they're looking to come in for the kill. And it seems to me that this is a situation on the global scale that the free world has to really keeping those antennas up about, because it's not just an accident.
Yeah.
It seems like so much more than an accident, and especially when you alluded, Al, to the economic prowess of China, and how they are surpassing the United States from the economic side, because right now the United States and the free world has been seriously hurt economically by this coronavirus, and that is something that we need to keep in mind. You know,
yep.
Is it a result of China's intent to hurt the American economy? I think that's something that we cannot ignore, and I think that it needs to be researched a lot further.
Okay, ladies and gentlemen, I've been chatting with Mayor David Rubin, author of Trump and the Jews, former mayor of Shiloh in Israel, and the founder of the Shiloh Children's Fund. David, thank you so much.
The Corlin Economics Report is produced for A.B. Corlin and Associates. Opinions expressed on this program are intended solely for the entertainment of our listeners, do not constitute investment advice, and are not necessarily those of this network, radio station, or our sponsors. Find out more about this program and today's guests by visiting www.kereport.com. For Al Corlin, this is Colleen Robbins. Join us again next week for the Corlin Economics Report.